Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands. Welcome back to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. We're creating a series here, and this is the third one in this series. And we're trying to explain how to generate business during challenging times. We know we're all in the middle of these COVID-19 times, in which it's particularly in B2B, can be challenging to realize your goals. There's plenty of opportunity, but we're here to help you. And today we're gonna talk about the webinar and the use of a webinar during a lead generation process, because tons of people organize webinars and it's even harder to get people to attain a webinar, but today we're going to talk about that.
Yes, and Elias, I think it's a great subject to talk about this now, because you just recently did a webinar on webinar marketing.
Yeah, I did a webinar on how to organize the best lead generation webinar possible. Yeah.
And I followed it, and it was a great webinar, and you're doing it once again, aren't you?
Yeah, end of June, beginning of July on marketingguys.com, you'll find the URL, and I'll put it in the show notes as well. So if you want to join the webinar live, feel free. End of June, beginning of July. Again, I'll put the registration link in the show notes, but let's start to cover what the steps are to generate a lead generation webinar.
Yes, you mentioned that to create the webinar as an ultimate lead generating machine, you put up 7 steps. And we're going to go much more in detail about these 7 steps, but for to make it clear what these 7 steps are, I'll summarize them. The first step is to decide what your goals are and who your target audience is and what kind of tools you're going to use. The second step that we're going to discuss is what kind of subject, what kind of topic are you going to talk about, and also what time are you going to do the webinar, because that's also quite important. Okay, when you've done that, we go to step number 3, and the step number 3 is how to make a promotion plan, how to get your audience. Number 4, something like what we call an open door, but very crucial also, and that is how to prepare your webinar. The 5th step is how to create engagement and interaction for qualifying your leads. And this step 5, that's a very important one, because that's something that is very much overseen.
Can't wait to tell you more about that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And step number 6 is make an offer that you cannot refuse. And it's your call to action. And at the number 7, it's the follow-up part with sales and marketing. 7 very crucial steps, and I think it's a good thing to go one by one and explain what they are. So Elias, number 1.
Yeah, so again, I'm thrilled to share these steps, because I don't know about you, but you know, I see so many invites coming by for webinars. I can literally spend my day by watching 3 webinars at a time. So, you know, it's like, and it always amazes me how poor lead generation actually is from these webinars. People put all kinds of efforts in their marketing stack to organize a webinar. They are getting nervous to when the webinar finally should take place, you know, and then people don't show up, or the people that show up stop watching or attending halfway. So there's tons of things you can improve to have a better webinar. So the first step actually is define your target, your KPI, your audience, and your tooling. So the webinar actually can be used throughout the whole customer journey. So it's not only an awareness thing. You know, if you take the
well, the good old-fashioned AIDA model, attention, interest, desire, action. You know, you can plot that and you can phrase it in different words, of course, like Google does, like the see, think, plan, act, care methodology. But in my case, it's just, I always stick to AIDA. But tons of people only use the webinar within one layer of that model, and that's the awareness phase. But, you know, just think about what you want to achieve during the webinar, because you can actually start using webinars within the desire phase, within the interest phase, and even within the action phase, where people want to start buying from you. So these different layers have different approaches. So you have to think clearly about what you want to achieve. What's your goal with this webinar? Secondly, it's very important to have your target audience clear. So who's actually gonna listen to your webinar? Who do you want to have there? Because, you know, if you're aiming in the B2B environment at CFOs, you don't want to share stuff that's interesting for CTOs. So it sounds like an open door, but it's very important, because people will basically stop being engaged, stop listening, turn the webinar off, etc., when you're not engaging with them. So it's important to have your KPIs, your targets, and your target audience clear. And then, as a preparation, your tooling. You know, there's all kinds of tooling available for webinars, and you have to think about how you're gonna do your webinar, what kind of tooling you're using. Because as we usually say, you know, there's if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. So there's all kinds of cheap webinar stuff out there. And my experience with webinar software is, you know, better get a good package with an established brand. And sometimes the established software tools look a little old-fashioned, I have to say. They're not the nicest and the shiniest tools, but they are reliable. They do what they need to do, and they are very steady in their performance. Because the thing you absolutely don't want during a webinar is technical difficulties. So you have to have reliable software. And you know, I'm not promoting any, let's say, brand or whatsoever, but everybody knows the bigger ones, like a GoToWebinar, a WebEx, BlueJeans, all these kinds of very established brands. Yes, you'll have to pay for them, but it's worth the money, because you're spending tons of money on organizing a webinar, you know, and why not spend the few bucks on having a good, reliable software solution? Also, the bigger tools, like the famous tools, the ones that are established, have integrations with marketing automation.
And that's a very important thing. Elias, if I listen to you, so what you're actually saying is that you have to have a bigger plan for your webinar than, and not just seeing that the webinar is the end goal.
No, absolutely, because the that's what absolutely correct, Mark. You know, it's like if people tend to have this webinar as a very exciting moment in the month, you know, it's like, yes, the 25th is going to be our webinar, and everything is geared towards having a high, let's say, intention moment on the 25th, for example. And you know, we usually say that's the beginning of a journey. You know, it's like if you have the webinar well prepared, that's part of the journey as well. Then you'll have a webinar, and then you'll have a follow up, which is, of course, step 7. And we're only at step 1.
Yeah.
So yeah, yes, prepare for success. And it sounds again like an open door, but you have to. So KPIs, target audience, your tooling, and you know, don't save on tooling. Use the correct tooling, because integration into marketing automation, for example, is so important, because everything you the listener to a webinar does or acts during a webinar is part of a personalization journey. And what I mean by that is, if you're having engagement, and we'll come to that later, within a webinar, and you're asking a poll question, for example, to qualify, you want that to be part of the profile within your marketing automation, for your follow-up, for your lead nurturing, etc. So you need to have a tool that stacks into a marketing automation platform in an intelligent way. It's not pushing, let's say, databases like names and addresses through, because that's, you can do that through Zapier, but you need to have an intelligent integration there for the whole process. Like, there is an invitation process where you invite people, there's a promotion process, there is a follow-up process, there is a process during the webinar. So all these processes need to be in place, and you know, we highly advise to use, let's say, acknowledged tooling.
Yeah, well, I think that an important thing is in choosing which kind of tool you're going to use, is that you don't look at it as a lonely thing, as a silo. It's not just the webinar tooling; it's in the whole package.
Absolutely. So
that's something that you really have to look at.
Yeah, and it's part of your preparation. So step two is defining your subject. So defining your subject, what you're gonna tell during the webinar, what you're gonna present. So content, and at what time. So subject, content, and time are very important, because coming back to that customer journey that I indicated before, if you're targeting a specific audience during a specific phase of the customer journey, it's important to have the right subject, because that's gonna be what people read, right? In their email invitation, for example. They need to be available on that time. So if you're in B2B, you don't wanna invite people 4 o'clock in the afternoon at the end of their day on a Friday, because they're probably exhausted. But you do want them to get to be available. So you need to find a time in which it works. Also, you have to keep in mind that people come in from different time zones, for example. So I get a lot of invites for webinars in the US, and I don't want to offend people in the US. I love the US, you know that, Mark, but you know, the people in the US,
the rest of the world is not always on their agenda.
That's you know, I tend to see a lot of invites from American webinars where they say, yeah, let's come to come together, get together on 11 a.m. on a Friday morning, which is happens to be 7 o'clock on my calendar, you know, at 7 o'clock on a Friday night, I'm usually doing something else than listening to webinars. It needs to be very important or very engaging for me to take part of it on that time. And, you know, I'm just one of the people. So, keep that time zone in mind if you're planning this webinar.
Yeah, I think also with the topic, it's also it's good to know. It's quite similar if you're doing email marketing and so, and doing with the segmentation, that you want to send messages to certain audiences. And this is the same. Think really good regarding the topics. Is this something I can do in one webinar, or is this something that I could do in sequential order?
Absolutely.
Several webinars pointing to a certain topic.
Don't make it too hard for yourself. So if you're for example planning to do some interviews during a webinar, and you would like to invite customers or referrals, don't have multiple people on there, because it's gonna take too long. People don't know who's talking, etc. So if you would like to have two or three customers in your webinar, why not making two or three webinars? That's what you're saying, and it's easy to do. So and you're bridging it very nicely for me to the third step, which is basically preparing your promotion plan, and that's very important. And it's the promotion plan basically is your success for the number of attendees that you're gonna generate, because without a proper promotion plan, you're not gonna find enough people to listen to your webinar within your target audience. So there's all kinds of channels that you can use for your promotion, and people usually start off with sending emails, of course. So most of businesses have a specific email list, like a list of prospective customers or attendees for a webinar, and they're gonna send that to then you could, of course, think about doing some social updates. So don't forget to share the webinar and have your colleagues share the webinar on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Facebook, or whatsoever.
Where your target audience is.
Where the target audience is. Thirdly, you have some paid advertising possibilities. So if you know exactly in step one who your target audience is, you can define target audiences within paid media as well. So start finding your paid media on LinkedIn. So start defining those target audiences through LinkedIn advertising. If you've never done it before, there's usually a credit of $100 or something for to start free advertising on LinkedIn. But you know, you could literally define the audience in the LinkedIn ad builder. The same you can do within Facebook. And quite surprisingly, a lot of B2B decision makers are also on Facebook. So it's very easy to target those people on Facebook. Of course, you can do some other campaigns around it. Think about being on referral website, like industry blogs or whatsoever. You can maybe get your webinar promoted through paid email list, email marketing list. So if there's someone in the industry does a big list, you can always have your webinar promoted there. Use pop-ups on your website, etc. All that kind of stuff to make them aware that this webinar is happening. But that's the promotional part. And
I would like to ask you a question, Elias. When do you start promoting? Let's say that your webinar is on the 1st of August. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
When would you...
Well, if it's on the 1st of August, you know, usually our rule of thumb would be to start 2 to 3 weeks beforehand actually promoting the webinar. So that doesn't mean that you have to start preparing. So preparing is not promoting, right?
No,
so preparing takes longer.
Yeah.
But actual promoting, doing your updates, it says for 2 to 3 weeks before the webinar, because people are not going to subscribe to a webinar that's a month away. Because that's just too long a horizon of time for people to subscribe to a webinar. So actually 2 to 3 weeks, and you keep promoting until a day before the webinar, actually.
I even see messages for an hour before.
Yep. Have you missed it? Just an email blast or whatsoever. There's we haven't seen you subscribing yet. You know, you can do that. Chances of people being available are pretty low, of course.
Yes.
But so that's why we tend to to stop promotion about, let's say, the evening before, so a day before the webinar, because we know people plan ahead a day usually. So 2 to 3 weeks until a day before the webinar works best, and then think about your landing page, because I see tons of landing pages for webinars that are the dullest pages you can see. There's a registration form, and there's webinar, and then the title of the webinar, and then register below. You know, that's not gonna encourage people or convince people to say, hey, you know, so they have to know what's in it for them. Again, coming back to the target audience, and we're also referring to the Robert Cialdini principles. The persuasion principles. So there are six of them. We'll put them in the show notes. We're not gonna talk about them again because we've covered them a couple of times already.
Yeah.
But you know, there's some things are in there like scarcity. Make sure you state the maximum number of seats available. And it sounds stupid, but you know, if you look on booking.com or priceline.com, and when you're looking at a seat or in an airplane or a hotel room, there is always this little window that pops up and says, six people are watching this at the moment. This room has been booked six times in the past 24 hours, you know? And as we're marketers, and we might think, yeah, of course, you know, people actually are convinced this is true. It is true in a lot of cases. But it makes them feel that they need to register soon, better sooner than later to be able to join.
That's why you see that there's a limited space left.
Yep, absolutely.
Although it's a virtual...
but it's actually, it is limited, because if you're using GoToWebinar, for example,
yeah.
you might have a license that allows only 100 people in.
Yeah.
So it could be, and we had that happen actually to our webinar, and we had to extend that, but we communicated that, hey, we have extra seats available.
Yeah.
The other thing is people like to join people that they like or brands that they like. So if you're targeting Inc. 500 brands, show them logos of people of brands that attended the webinar before. You know, companies like Shell or companies like Unilever or whatsoever have been part of this webinar. If you're targeting smaller audiences, you know, show them maybe logos from companies in their industry. People that they can identify with.
Yeah.
Because people, you know, if you're just a small pop and mom shop and you're looking to for a service, and you're not going to subscribe to a webinar where you say, yeah, this is where all the industry leaders are and people like CEOs from Exxon have been on this webinar, you're going to think, oh, this is too big for me. I'm not going to be part of this. So make sure that you show logos, for example. People like you have done this because, you know, I think Seth Godin states this every once in a while. You know, it's like... people like you like people like you and me.
Yeah. So I've got a question. It's starting 3 weeks in front. Is there a difference in what kind of channel you use, or you do paid social and email at the same time? Or?
Well, it depends on the media you're using, of course. So email, we usually have a lead generation flow.
Mm.
So we would start up with first invitation, look who registered, we'll do a reminder and another reminder, etc. Maybe you want to change messaging a little throughout the nurturing flow. You can start doing retargeting, but you need to have like a specific cookie pool for that. Mm. So you need to have at least a people like 100 or 150 people visiting that website to be technically available to retarget those people. So it could be that, depending on the number of people you have on the website, your retargeting usually starts after a week or so.
So that could be actually a good strategy if you have multiple webinars.
Absolutely.
Because
Absolutely.
Then you say, you could do the remarketing. Hey, you showed interest another webinar. For us. We've got another one.
Absolutely. Okay. So that works very well. What we usually do is, if you have a webinar about a specific topic you would like to do more often, like you said, like maybe first time you only start by using your email list, and your second webinar targets new audience, so new logos, new names, people that you don't have in your database, etc.
Mm.
And then you're targeting through LinkedIn, through Facebook, etc.
Yeah,
that could be a very good strategy as well. But you know, make sure you have a good landing page. Make sure the landing page is actually appealing to people, and it's not like an administrative process. The fact that you get people on that landing page is not a guarantee for them to for you that they will register. So you need to make sure this is a great looking landing page, and especially for those people in B2B. You know, people, decision makers, don't have a lot of time. They want to spend time on what actually delivers them something. So they need to know, what's in it for me? Why should I attend this? How long is it gonna take? When is it gonna, you know, and how can this help me? So it needs to be an appealing landing page.
Well, my tip would be, put something like Hotjar on it.
Absolutely.
And don't be afraid to adjust the landing page during that process.
Absolutely.
Because nothing is fixed, and if you see in Hotjar, because Hotjar is a tool where you can see the movements of the cursors, and you can have recordings, so you can actually see what people do on that page. And if you see that people skip it or don't do what you thought they would do, it's time to change it so that they will do what you want to do. And then you will see your conversions go up.
Absolutely. And speaking about conversions, again, nice bridging for me. Thank you, Mark. The fifth step, which I think is the actually most interesting step within the webinar, I'm only at the fourth step, right?
You skipped one. You said you wanted to talk about number five, but we have to do. I have to be strict in this, Elias. The preparing of the webinar.
That's step four, preparation. Very important. You know, because I tend to see a lot of people doing webinars and they don't prepare. You know, people that know me. I can be very enthusiastic. I can be very enthusiastic about webinars, but it pisses me off when something goes wrong. And you know that by experience, Mark. You know, during a webinar, sometimes I have thrown out cups out of the window, etc. because things went wrong and we didn't rehearse, etc. But make sure you rehearse a webinar. Not only your presentation. So let's say you have a PowerPoint, or maybe you're doing a Prezi, or maybe you're doing a presentation in person, you know, whatever, you know, make sure your story is correct. But by preparation, I also mean your technical preparation. Make sure you rehearse and you make 100% sure that you know how the software or the tool works. Make sure that you know, oh, when a chat window opens, this and this is what happens. Oh, when we have a technical problem, we need to have something in place for them. Oh, oops, something went wrong. You know, there needs to be something in place. Make sure that you absolutely know that the microphone works, the video works, you have a stable internet connection. Make sure that you absolutely rehearse polls and quizzes. You know, how is this actually working? Because some of the software tools, for example, have a little a relay in there. So it's if you're presenting, for example, through GoToWebinar, people have a possibility to use either a browser to watch it or the GoToWebinar tool. If they're using a browser, they get your webinars about 20 seconds later than the people that are in the actual tool. So if they're using the app, the GoToWebinar app, it's real time.
Mm-hmm.
If they're using the website or the web tool, which about 95% of people do, make sure you have maybe you're aware of that 20 second gap. Because if you're doing a poll.
Yeah, that's what I want to say.
That's something you would like to know.
don't make the poll 20 seconds.
And you don't want to find out about that during your first webinar. So because that poll on your end is live. So you're starting a poll and you don't see results coming until after 20 seconds. So you have to have 40 seconds at least for a poll, for example. So those are the things you need to rehearse. So do a rehearsal and make sure you always have three people available at a webinar. First, of course, a presenter. Then you'll have a technical person who takes care of all the technical stuff plus the chat, because people start asking questions during a webinar through the chat window. When you're presenting, and you also have to answer chats, you know, that's not gonna work. You'll be distracted. You forget about the storyline, etc. So you need to have someone next to you answering chats and doing the technical stuff. And the third person I always recommend to have there, make sure you have someone logging in as a listener to make sure that what is being broadcasted is correct. So you always have three people available at a webinar. Don't try to do it yourself, your own, because you'll be distracted. It sounds a little, let's say, buggy, and people will you know, stop listening, because it's not going to be a fluent story.
Yeah, what I would like to add to that is the internet connection. If you're going to do webinars more often, go in, get your IT department involved and say, is there one way or another that you can give me like a dedicated line or something like that, so that,
or assign some bandwidth,
Something like that, so that you have actually guaranteed bandwidth, because it's really
It's critical.
It's critical.
If you don't have enough bandwidth, things are gonna break up. Exactly. So you don't want that to happen. So absolutely, that's important. Also with the background noises. So people don't see us sitting here today, but we are sitting in a room in the middle of the building because we have learned through previous experiences that when you're sitting in a room with windows, all of a sudden an ambulance comes by or someone starts to clean windows and that always seems to happen when you're in the middle of recording.
Yes. So we also got an on-air sign outside so that our colleagues know they can't interrupt us.
Yeah. And absolutely.
And another thing that you didn't point it out, we had one of our first webinars was not really a great experience.
A learning.
It was a learning curve. But one of the things that I used everything on a MacBook, and quite honestly, you need more real estate to put all the screens. So the chat screen was behind my presentation screen, so I didn't see all this kind of stuff, and that makes things very complicated. So make use of multiple screens, or if you're going to do this more often, use an ultra wide screen. These things don't cost very much anymore, but with a 34 inch you've got space to have three apps next to each other.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, it's, when people see those screens, they're always like, oh, you're using those, what other webinar you are? And especially when you have like a presentation running on one, and then you have a chat window, and then you might have on the third one, you might have your email open because some people start emailing that they can't have access, you know, that kind of stuff. And you want that technical person to have that screen as well. So absolutely. Which now actually brings me to the fifth step.
Time for step number five.
Engagement and interaction for a webinar in order to qualify leads. I can't stress this enough, but you know, people tend to organize webinars for lead generation. That's what they usually claim. And everyone that registers is a lead. Well, what if you have 150, 200 registrants for a webinar, and let's say 120 to 150 attendees? How are you gonna qualify them? You know, it's like they've been to a webinar. Are they a lead now?
Yeah.
You don't know. So I asked, I was talking to a customer of ours last week, and I was talking to him about a webinar that he organized, and I said, what kind of interaction did you do? He said, do you mean like polling? I hate polling. I said, well, okay. Why is that? Yeah, because it's a pain in the ass to do. It never works. It distracts me from presenting, etc. Basically, he pointed me out that it was a hassle for him to do it. And the thing I gave back to him is, it's like, you know, the webinar is there to qualify your leads. Just don't view the webinar as a broadcasting thing. Your webinar is actually a possibility to do lead qualification. So we do advise several things for people to create engagement. So when possible, send out something tangible to listeners beforehand. So you ask people to register for a webinar. People register that you've never heard of, people that don't know your brand, that don't know your presenter, and you would like to get them to involve them with the brand. So what you're doing, what you could do, is send them something through physical mail, through snail mail. So you're gonna send them a tangible asset or whatsoever. The reason you do this is to engage them with your brand. So you could send out the simplest things, like the booklets, you could send out a magnet, you could send out whatever, like a small gimmick. The reason you do this is two reasons. First of all, you get possession of their addresses, and you get more data. Secondly, they feel engaged and they feel a reason to be part of the webinar. If you send them something, it's going to be hard, which is delivered to their doorstep the day of the webinar. You know, it's they feel it's kind of rude to be not at the webinar.
Yes. And I would like to add, if it's not a huge amount, so not in the hundreds, but let's say that's 50, and you're going to send them something, why don't put a handwritten note? How personal can you be that you have a handwritten note from the presenter and say, I'm looking forward to meeting you and to talk to you? Or
The other thing which you could do is, like, if you're having a landing page on the webinar, just don't ask for registrar's data. Ask them what they would like to learn during a webinar. So if that's an open thing, you could ask them, like, what's the primary or the most important thing you would like to learn from this webinar? First of all, they will probably think that you're going to tailor your story a little towards that. But you could also, within that handwritten note, or print it on the envelope.
Yeah.
And we've actually done that before. You know, it's like if you put on the envelope and you print out, say, hey, Mark, looking forward to seeing you next Tuesday on the webinar where we're going to tell you everything about, and then put in there what they would like to learn and what they filled out in that form. You know, people will feel, hey, this is some company that I'd like to learn more about because they actually take me serious. You know, they know about me. They are actually, let's say, creating value for me. So that's before the webinar. But during the webinar, these polls that we do are meant for lead qualification. So if you're doing polls, people in the within the webinar tend to answer those polls immediately. It's like yes or no, or they can pick from a list or whatsoever, and you can see the instant results. And then as a presenter, you could take those results and tailor your story a little bit around it. What people usually don't realize is that all these answers are being put back into the marketing automation. So if you think about it more like a qualification process and say, hey, what would I like to know about an attendee, start asking your questions around that, your polling.
Yeah. Don't make it also too difficult.
Don't make it too difficult, but let's say you're an accounting firm and you have all kinds of businesses listening to your webinar about COVID-19 at the moment. You know, you would like to know at the end of the webinar, if you have 200 attendees, you would like to know which 5, 10, 15 people you have to call, because you're not going to be able to give them a call, the 200 people a call afterwards. So you would like to ask them a question like, what are you outsourcing your accountant stuff now? So that could be a question, yes or no. The second one question you could have is, are you experiencing difficulties at the moment? Third one could be, are you experiencing difficulties and do you have someone in place to help you here? Do you feel you need help? Do you feel you have all the in-house capabilities to solve the problem? All that kind of questions. And if you put together a profile afterwards, it's very easy to have a lead qualification process in place.
Yeah, well, you're not making the polls because of they are the polls. You're making the polls because you want to segment later and you want to know who of your attendees will fit in that certain segment.
Absolutely.
So we did the same for instance, our webinar.
Yep.
Our question was, have you ever done a webinar before? Yes or no.
Have you ever organized a webinar before?
That would really make the ones in two segments, yes, the ones that did and ones that have never done it before. Then we asked a little bit later on, do you use marketing automation? Yes.
If so, this and this brand?
Yeah, this. But once again, that feedback is very relevant for us for the further process, because you want to send people that don't have marketing automation different information than the ones that have.
And even within the follow-up. So people that answered during a poll question, I have marketing automation, got a different follow-up email with the recording than the people that said, yes, I already have, or no, I have not. I think we put, for example, a white paper in there for people that answered, we don't have any automation yet. And for the people that did have, we put a free consultation call or whatsoever. But we, based on what people answered in the calls, you personalize your flow and your follow-up.
Yeah, so basically, it's like reverse engineering. You ask the questions based on what kind of information you want to do the follow-up.
Absolutely. So, talking about follow-up, during the webinar, you have to give a call to action. We can call it like an offer you can't refuse, like The Godfather did in one of the three Godfather movies. But you need to have an offer during the webinar, because otherwise your webinar is leading towards nothing. You know, it's just going to end with that open information and thank you for attending, see you in future or whatsoever. Yeah. You know, you need to have an offer they can't refuse. And coming back to your first step, where you have to set your goals and for your target audience, of course that needs to be aligned with your call to action. So make sure you have something in place, an offer for them, which is for webinar listeners only. So if they're listening to the webinar, you could say, hey, we have a, if you're selling services, we have a service for you, which is discounted, or you get something free or something extra when you sign up, and you have to mention webinar XYZ. You can find it here and here, and it's only available for you as a listener for a maximum amount of time. So you need to give people some time on the horizon and say, if you're doing a webinar on Wednesday, you say, we have a special offer for you which is valid until Friday. They need to feel and see, because it's very transparent online these days, that it's actually an offer only valid for them as a listener. It shouldn't be something that's been available always. It shouldn't be something that will be available afterwards. You know, it needs to be something that is actually appealing to them and logical as a next step for the follow-up.
Yeah, it's a reward for that they've done, spent their time listening to you.
Absolutely. So make sure you have an offer they can't refuse. And then the final one, which is easy now that you know the six steps, the follow-up with sales. Because after you have had this webinar, everything starts. You know, this is the start of a new sales cycle. So you need to have to make sure that you provide your sales managers, your SDRs, BDRs, whatsoever. You hand them over the leads, but you hand them over qualified leads. It's not like, here is the list of webinar attendees, go call them, because you know they'll start complaining and say, yeah, you know, what did they do? You'll start giving them a qualified list of people. And of course, the most relevant ones will be on top. You know, you'll have, if you have 50 attendees of a webinar, you'll have five based on the engagement, based on the poll answers, based on how they reacted to the call to actions, the questions they asked on chats, and what they filled out during the registration. What would you like to learn? You know, those, if those are used as a qualification methodology, you'll have hot leads for sales. And sales will be happy to call them, because, you know, they'll have five leads. They know there is a need. Well, if you apply the BAND principle, budget, authority, need, and time frame, you know, they'll have a budget, they'll have authority, there'll be a need, and they'll need it fast, because you know, based on the poll answers, when they need it. So that's your follow-up for sales. And then you have a marketing follow-up, because there's also going to be people that are not ready to buy yet. So you need to have like lead nurturing flows. Make sure, based on personalized info, what was answered during the polls, during qualification, etc., make sure you have personalized journeys, nurturing journeys afterwards. So don't put all these people on one list, make sure they get relevant information and make sure you nurture them. And in a later stage, you hand them over to sales. So that's my seven steps.
Yeah, I think with these seven steps, your audience will love you.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to give them great information that's built very much. Your sales colleagues will love you because instead of that they have to call 50 people where 20 or 30 says, why are you calling me?
Their hit rate will go up dramatically.
Yeah, they would. So in general, and you will love it. I've got one last question because we've got the 7 points or so, but one thing we haven't talked about, what is the ideal length of a webinar?
Yeah, well, that's a nice question because people tend to plan a webinar for an hour because it's usually a slot of an hour. I would say depending on where the customer in his phase is, it would either be half an hour or an hour. Half an hour is ideal when you want to share some quick knowledge and mm-hmm. give an update or do a series of webinars because people only have to listen for half an hour. And then you have an hour when you want to inspire people, tell them more, go in depth, etc. But my golden tip here is schedule an hour, but
make it
50 minutes. Up 45 to 50 minutes. So you actually give people time back that they didn't expect it. So they feel pleased afterwards, say, wow, I've won 50 minutes in my schedule today. I can do something else.
Yeah.
You know, that's better than just pile it up at the end and say, yes, we made it within the hour, you know?
Yeah. Like, anybody questions? Oh, we've got only 30 seconds. Goodbye.
So absolutely. So people will feel, basically very happy afterwards. If you have planned an hour and you only spent 45, 50 minutes and they'll actually have some time to prepare for a next meeting because nowadays everyone goes from Team, Zoom, whatever meeting to meeting and they're full and especially the most important thing you can't buy with money is time. And if you give money, if you give time back to someone, that's appreciated massively. So they'll even have a motivation and they'll feel positively about you.
Yeah, and if you want to think how long is about 50 minutes, that's about this podcast.
Absolutely. This podcast was about 50 minutes.
Yes. Well, I think that we've gone through a lot of stuff. If you're going to do something with webinars, of course, you've got all this information. If you've got the time, take a look. It's in the show notes that you can follow our webinar. And if you've got any questions or whatsoever, you know, feel free to get in touch with us.
Yeah, we do this, of course, as a service as well. So we help organizations worldwide to organize successful lead generation webinars. So yes, if you feel like you need help on your webinar, if you have done webinars and in the past and you've thrown around stuff like I did, and you think, no, we need to have some, like a great experience, call us, send me an email, schedule something in my calendar.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our channel. Also, if you would like to be a guest on the show or if you know anyone that should be a guest to our show, drop me an email through e.crum@marketingguys.nl or take a look at the website marketingguys.com. Thanks for listening.